Shazbot.
Shazbot, indeed. This is a special episode of the Intellectual Podcast. Coming to you tonight on the evening of Robin Williams' passing. There's no word that I can describe how I feel right now other than devastated.
Yeah.
Robin Williams was for me a complete icon in this business and one of the first actors that really grabbed my attention even as a child. Mm-hmm. Somebody whose name I recognized and looked forward to seeing what he was doing next. Okay. Sitting with me right now is my sister Teresa.
Hello.
And Steve Schwartz.
Hello.
How did you guys hear the news today?
I was just perusing Facebook, as I want to do, and just came across this one posting from someone I knew, and my jaw dropped immediately, and I went, no, this is one of those fake ones. And I just got really upset, really angry. It's like, why would you do this if you didn't verify it? Then all of a sudden, one after the next came up, and it was just crushing for me.
Now, Teresa and I were sitting in the living room, and both our phones went ding, and it was a text from Brian, who
is never the one to give us these kinds of news. Normally, David and I are the ones that tell him.
Oh.
So he messaged us, and we both read it at the same time and went, what the hell?
Yeah.
And I immediately pulled up TMZ. Because TMZ...
They're usually the first ones.
They're usually the first ones.
Yeah. I just pulled up a Google search, and it was the top piece of news. And I was like, damn it, it's true. Just absolutely devastated. The official statement out from his wife read, "This morning I lost my husband and my best friend, while the world lost one of its most beloved artists and beautiful human beings. I'm utterly heartbroken. On behalf of Robin's family, we are asking for privacy during our time of profound grief. As he is remembered, it is our hope the focus will not be on Robin's death, but on the countless moments of joy and laughter he gave to millions."
Mm.
Yeah, dude was a funny man. There's no denying that. Absolutely hilarious. And I think no film does a better job of exemplifying his comedic timing and his humor more than Good Morning Vietnam. So I'm going to roll a clip from that right now. We can listen to the man at what I think was arguably the height of his comedic prowess.
I would say it's also the first time that directed said would just say to Robin, go.
Riff. All right, here it is. The first Adrian Cronauer broadcast on Good Morning Vietnam.
Good morning, Vietnam! Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me. Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early. Speaking of early, how about that Cro-Magnon Marty Drywitz? Thank you, Marty, for silky smooth sound. Make me sound like Peggy Lee. Freddy and the Dreamers.
The wrong speed. We've got it on the wrong speed. For those of you who are recovering from a hangover, that's going to sound just right.
Let's pull it right back down. Let's try it a little faster, see if that picks it up a little bit. Let's get up on 780. Those pilots are going right now. I really like the music. I really like the music. I really like the music. Oh, still a bad song.
Hey, wait a minute. Let's try something.
Let's play this backwards and see if it gets any better.
Look, there's Niv here. Freddy is the devil. Look, there's Niv here. Freddy is the devil.
Hey, hi, can you help me? What's your name?
My name's Roosevelt Lee Roosevelt.
Roosevelt, what town are you stationed in?
I'm stationed in Poon Tang.
Well, thank you, Roosevelt. What's the weather like out there?
It's hot. Damn hot. Real hot. Hot as this is my shorts. I can cook things in it. A little crotch pot cooking.
Well, can you tell me what it feels like?
Fool, and it's hot. I told you again. Were you born on the sun? It's damn hot. You can be a little thing. I saw it so damn hot. I saw one of those little guys in the orange robe burst into flames. It's that hot. You know what I'm talking about. What do you think it's going to be like tonight? It's going to be hot and wet. That's nice if you're with a lady, but it ain't no good if you're in the jungle. Thank you, Roosevelt. Here's a song coming your way right now. Nowhere to Run To by Martha and the Vandellas. Yes. Hey, you know what I mean. AFBN, rocking you from the Delta to the DMZ. AFBN, better than AFBD, which means you have to get a quick shot. We're moving on right now. Here's a riddle for you. What's the difference between the Army and the Cub Scouts? Cub Scouts don't have heavy artillery. Hey, I'm going to get a 1600. Why? Because I have to. It's the Army. Talking out the field today. Hi, what's your name?
Hey, Bob Fever.
Bob, what do you do?
I'm in artillery.
Thank you, Bob. Isn't we play anything for you?
Anything. Just play it loud, okay?
No, I have meant nothing to you. I just named you crazy. Women that look like Norma. Woo. Thank you.
Those girls are just so pretty. Gomer, are you here in Vietnam? Yes, I am. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Linda, why did you name your daughter Linda Bird?
Because Linda Dog would be too cruel.
Ah, easy, girl.
Easy. You know, if you pick them up by their ears, it doesn't hurt them as much.
Oh, you're going straight to hell for that one. Watch out over there.
Here's an incredible coincidence. Ho Chi Minh, Colonel Sanders, actually the same person.
You be the judge. Our lines are open. Something real special right now. We've got our traffic report up there on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. How's it going up there?
Adrian, it's not going exactly well. There's a water buffalo jackknife up there. It's not a very pretty picture. There's horns everywhere. I don't know what to say. We're going to maybe drop in a little napalm there and try and cook him down. Maybe a little barbecue.
We've got a special man in the audience today right now. It's Mr. Leo.
He's a fashion consultant for the Army.
But thank you, Adrian. I'm just very happy to be here. I want to tell you something. You know, this whole camouflage thing for me doesn't work very well.
Why is that? Well, because you go in the jungle, I can't see you.
You know, it's like wearing stripes and plaid. For me, I want to do something different. You know, you go in the jungle, make a statement if you're going to fight clash. You know what I mean?
Thank you for that lovely tune. That funky music will drive us till the dawn. Let's go, let's boogaloo till we puke.
That's about it for the Adrian Crown Hour. I'm going to take myself out of the driver's seat, but I'm going to turn you over right now to Mr. Excitement, a man with limp, damaged hair, but nevertheless, a fireball, Dan Levitan.
So funny.
Oh, gosh.
Teresa, you were in elementary school when that came out, right?
Yeah, I was
tiny. I think I was in junior high when that came out.
Yeah.
I was not.
Well, yes, you are older than us.
Steve's always been old.
Yes,
but
I've always been old.
But I think this is what I'm getting at: is you're approaching 50.
Yeah,
Teresa's in her mid 30s. You know, between us alone, that's 15 years or so of age difference. Mm-hmm. My father loved Robin Williams.
Yeah.
My mother is completely freaking torn by the news. She didn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Like, she walked off. Don't tell me that. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I don't. Yeah. No, no. She couldn't take it. She couldn't take it.
My father's almost 80, and yeah, it floored him.
This is an entertainer who knew no age bound.
No.
Nope.
Everybody connected with Robin Williams.
He was brilliantly funny. And funny goes across every single. When you are truly 100% funny, there's no age barrier. When you know what funny is and you know how to hit someone right in the heart with either being funny or being dramatic, there's nothing more authentic than that.
Yeah. And his particular brand of humor was so energetic and just mesmerizing. Once he launched into his comedic territory, it was just magnetic. You couldn't take your eyes off
of it. Right. It was like lighting black powder. Mm-hmm. It just ignites and just goes. And you don't know where it's going to go, but you know it's going to be amazing.
Teresa, what was your favorite comedic performance of Robin Williams?
You know, it's funny. Ever since I got the news, I've been trying to decide on one.
Yeah.
And I'll flip through different ones. Loved him in Popeye. Which a lot of people don't know that
there's
one.
There's a lot of love for Popeye on this podcast.
Obviously, from my childhood, it's the Genie. him being the genie. And I do know that they, in the beginning of Aladdin, when he plays, when the genie is that selling, the guy selling stuff, they put him in a room with a bunch of props and just said, here, we're just going to record you.
Yeah, just riff on these props.
And so that's how they came up with, you know, Will Not Break, you know, it makes Julian fries and all that sort of stuff. It was just stuff he just, broke. You know, and he broke the prop. So, you know, so for my childhood, it would probably have to be, you know, Genie and Popeye.
I remember reading an interview with the producers and them saying that they have hours of tapes of him riffing on stuff in this prop room. And at least three quarters of it was too vulgar to
inappropriate.
Use in a kid's cartoon.
It was inappropriate, yeah.
But they just basically set him loose.
In my adult life, though, his stand-up comedy. He did a HBO special. He went on tour. It was about
3 or 4 years ago.
5 years ago or so. I really wish I had the money to go to it. But I watched the HBO special of it, and I cried and peed my pants laughing so hard.
Well, my favorite piece of his stand-up, I think forever, will be where he talked about golf. And how the Scots created golf. And I've got that clip. I'm gonna play that later in this episode.
No, that one's so funny.
But for right now, just to kind of round out a little bit of the humor of the man.
He's a huge soccer fan too. Yes, and he was I really appreciate it because growing up with soccer, and we talk about this a lot. You know, back when we were kids, it was not the most popular thing. But he was a celebrity that was very outspoken about how beautiful the game was.
Yeah.
And how true. He loved it. And just thought it was wonderful. And it was nice to see my idol be a fan of one of my passions. So that was always cool for me.
Mm-hmm. I got two clips here that kind of really exemplify a little bit more the humor of the man. I'm going to play them a little bit out of order how I was going to play them. But for you, Teresa, here's the genie from Aladdin.
He's free.
I 10,000 years will
can
give you
such
a
kink
in
the
neck. Hang on a second. Whoa! Does it feel good to be out of there? I'm telling you, nice to be back, ladies and gentlemen. Hi, where are you from? What's your name?
Aladdin.
Aladdin. Hello, Aladdin. Nice to have you on the show. Can we call you Al? Or maybe
we
just
did.
In? Or how about Lottie? Sounds like here, boy. Come on, Lottie.
Hey, you're a lot smaller than my last master. Either that or I'm getting bigger. Look at me from the side. Do I look different to you?
Wait a minute. I'm your master?
That's right. He can be taught.
What could you wish of me?
The ever impressive.
The one
contained.
But never duplicate. Genie of the lamp.
Right here, direct from the lamp. Right here for your very much wish fulfillment. Thank you.
So what'll it be, Master?
You're gonna grant me any three wishes I want, right?
Almost. There are a few provisos, a couple of quid pro quo.
Like?
Rule number one, I can't kill anybody.
Yeah, so don't ask.
Rule number two, I can't make anybody fall in love with anybody else.
You little punim there.
Rule number three,
I can't bring people back from the dead. It's not a pretty picture. I don't have to.
In case of emergency, the exits are here.
Anywhere. Keep your hands and arms inside the carpet. We...
You know what I love by that, though? That's his voice. Yeah. You know, like, that's him. Mistaking that's Robin Williams' voice.
No, and it's not Bradley Cooper with Rocket Raccoon.
No, where there's no
it's
way
Robin Williams
that is Robin Williams being Robin Williams.
Without a doubt.
And he's brilliant as the genie.
just makes one reference that goes over every single kid's head who hasn't been around past 1978, 1979.
Ed Sullivan?
Yeah, Ed Sullivan. You had William F. Buckley reference.
Yeah.
Just, provisos, well, quid pro quo. Like, oh my God. Nobody does William F. Buckley in a cartoon.
But you know, everybody quotes the genie.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
Yeah.
And be yourself.
Everybody.
Wanted a stinger?
Mrs. Doubtfire is one of the other comedic genius pieces of his. Yes. And it's unfortunate.
Hello.
His passing means we're not going to see the sequel that he was.
What is
someone else is going to play it.
I pray they don't do that.
Yeah. When his boobs went on fire.
Hello! But here's a scene that a lot of people forget about.
Him riffing in the beginning.
This is where he's riffing at the beginning, and I just think this is so funny, especially the way it ends. So here it is, Robin Williams and Mrs. Doubtfire.
I do voices.
What do you mean, you do voices?
Ben, I do voices.
Yeah!
We've come to this planet looking for intelligent life. Oops, we made a mistake.
What happened to be in America? Don't ask for a green card.
I want you in the worst way.
Boss, it's certainly a rough meeting, and it's not going very well for me, I'll tell you that.
Hey, boss, give it a chance. She's going to loosen up any moment.
Look at me right now, Moneypenny. I want to undo that bow and get to know you.
I'm requesting to make a deal with you. Nancy and I are still looking for the other half of my head.
Idiot! Idiot! I'm sitting on a gold mine.
Don't make me smack you, sweetheart. I'll do it. I do a great impression of a hot dog.
Mr. Hillard, do you consider yourself humorous?
I used to. There was a time when I found myself funny. But today, you have proven me wrong.
I would just love to have seen the outtakes from that where she's actresses actually pissing herself.
You know they had to piece that together where her takes are completely separate from that.
Like where she's just loses it every single time.
He was so funny.
There's another montage in Mrs. Doubtfire where they're going over the makeup. And all the different characters that he's coming up with.
One of my all-time favorites, and when it's on, I always stop and watch, is The Birdcage.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I can't help myself.
We were talking about that one.
If I see earlier. It in the guide, yeah. I'm watching it. Yeah. There's no way I can. I don't care if there's 2 minutes left in the movie or if it.
Well, and it's.
I'm the same way with Bicentennial Man.
See, now Bicentennial Man is one that I don't think I ever actually watched.
Oh, I own it. I mean, I love that movie to death.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw it, but Birdcage. Yeah. So funny. And not just Robin in that. I mean, everybody.
Everybody's
like,
good. Nathan Lane. But
and
the
Hank
two
Azaria,
play off each other.
They all brought their A game.
Yeah.
I think, because they knew they were playing the funny man to his straight man.
Mm-hmm.
Straight man.
Yeah, because he was playing the straight man. Yeah. Yeah.
But the
he was not the obnoxiously flamboyant one.
Yeah. The bit where he's explaining how to dance is just you do all that, but you keep it in inside.
Madonna. Also when
he's teaching Nathan Lane how to be Butch.
Oh, the whole John Wayne thing.
The whole John Wayne.
Did I do it wrong?
I didn't realize that's how he walked.
No, I just never realized that's how he walked. That's hilarious.
Well, the one scene where he's saying, what do you think about the game yesterday? The Dolphins, you know, they screwed up. They're on their own 14-yard line. And he's like, how do you feel about that? Oh, I don't know. Betrayed, bewildered, confused. And he says, too much? He says, I'm not sure.
You know that had to have been a hard movie filmed because those two guys together I don't see how it could have been an organized set.
Yeah.
Oh, never. They're both chaotic and all over the place. And
they're both Disney characters.
They're both Disney characters.
Yes. In two of the better Disney animated films from that.
That was during that golden chunk.
Resurgence of Disney films. And then we have dramatic.
Dramatic.
Robin Williams.
All the drama.
And we've discussed it through the other interviews that mm-hmm. come up in tonight's episode, but everything from The World According to Garp to Fisher King, Good Will Hunting, Awakenings, 1 hour photo, creepy movie.
He was absolutely
amazing dramatic.
Even his dramatic roles, guest starring roles on like, he did a Law and Order.
Yeah.
And he also did Criminal Minds.
Uh-huh.
Criminal Minds.
He was freaky. It was totally scary. No, that was totally freaky. That one freaked me out. I remember watching that episode. I was freaked out.
Just amazing how he does, how he's able to just take on the dramatic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, comedy is tragedy plus time, but, you know, you've got to.
Well, and who else could play the grown-up Peter Pan?
Nobody.
That's true.
I mean, seriously, who else could pull off?
I mean, it was
being a grown man, but can portray being a kid. Were
considered for that role, and no,
no,
nobody else could have.
Nobody else could have pulled that one off.
All right, so let's explore a little bit of the dramatic side of Robin Williams with. This is the role that he won an Oscar for, mm-hmm. As the mentor, if you will, to Matt Damon's character in Good Will Hunting.
I thought he was a therapist.
Huh?
Is a therapist.
He teaches it.
Oh, that's right.
He's very clear in one of the scenes. Mm-hmm. I teach this stuff. It doesn't mean I know how to practice it. But here's this scene where they're sitting on the park bench together. Mm. This for me is everything for this movie. Mm-hmm.
So what's this? The taste is choice moment between guys.
This is really nice. You got a thing for swans? Is this like a fetish? It's something like maybe we need to devote some time to.
Thought about what you said to me the other day about my painting. Huh? Stayed up half the night thinking about it. Something occurred to me. I fell into a deep, peaceful sleep and haven't thought about you since. You know what occurred to me?
No.
You're just a kid. You don't have the faintest idea of what you're talking about.
Why, thank you.
It's all right. You've never been out of Boston. If I asked you about art, you'd probably give me the skinny on every art book ever written. Michelangelo. I know a lot about him. Life's work, political aspirations, him and the Pope, sexual orientation, the whole works, right? I bet you can't tell me what it smells like in the Sistine Chapel. You've never actually stood there and looked up at that beautiful ceiling. Seen that. If I ask you about women, you'd probably give me a silver, say your personal favorites. You may have even been laid a few times. But you can't tell me what it feels like to wake up next to a woman and feel truly happy. You're a tough kid. I ask you about war, you'd probably throw Shakespeare at me, right? Once more into the breach, dear friends. But you've never been near one. You've never held your best friend's head in your lap and watch him gasp his last breath looking to you for help. I ask you about love, you'd probably quote me a sonnet. But you've never looked at a woman and been totally vulnerable. Known someone that could level you with her eyes. Feeling like God put an angel on earth just for you. Who could rescue you from the depths of hell. And you wouldn't know what it's like to be her angel. To have that love for her be there forever. Through anything. Through cancer. And you wouldn't know about sleeping, sitting up in a hospital room for 2 months, holding her hand. Because the doctors could see in your eyes that the terms visiting hours don't apply to you. You don't know about real loss. Because that only occurs when you love something more than you love yourself. I doubt you've ever dared to love anybody that much. I look at you. I don't see an intelligent, confident man. I see a cocky, scared, shitless kid. But you're a genius, Will. No one denies that. No one could possibly understand the depths of you. But you presume to know everything about me because you saw a painting of mine. You ripped my fucking life apart. You're an orphan, right? Do you think I'd know the first thing about how hard your life has been, how you feel, who you are? Because I read Oliver Twist. Does that encapsulate you? Personally, I don't give a shit about all that because you know what? I can't learn anything from you. I can't read in some fucking book. Unless you want to talk about you, who you are. And I'm fascinated. I'm in. But you don't want to do that, do you, Sport? You're terrified of what you might say. You move, Chief.
That's such an amazing scene.
Just lays him out.
Just.
Need a minute?
No, it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know? We just lost the man to mental illness.
Yeah.
I mean, really. And his best arguably role. Best and biggest role, and the one that he won the big nut for,
mm-hmm.
is a therapist.
Yeah.
You know, it's a man, the depth of his dramatic acting never ceased to amaze me.
Mm-hmm.
And the delivery of that scene, and I know this is an audio podcast, so you were just listening to it, but Gus Van Sant, who directed that film, basically kept that camera on him alone
mm-hmm.
for the majority of that scene until the last two or three lines, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's a single shot, no cuts, straight through, very little camera movement. It is all about Robin Williams telling this kid how it is. The power of that performance is unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's been what, almost 15 years, 16 years since that movie came out?
Yeah.
And it still just floors me. Absolutely floors me. He was a genius. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. As much as that movie is about Matt Damon's character, mm-hmm. Robin Williams is the character in that movie that mm-hmm. I remember the most, for sure.
I heard that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck didn't want anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's who they had in their mind to play that character was Robin Williams when they were writing that script.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. What about you, Teresa? What are some of the other dramatic roles of his that you recall and kind of remember the most?
Well, I'll say it, but if you're going to play anything from it, I'm not going to watch because it will. I can't at all. What Dreams May Come?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I couldn't bring myself to put any of that on this episode. No.
That one makes me, I'm going to cry. So,
that movie made me cry before he died.
Yeah. It,
as I said before, it made me a blubbering mess because it came out at the same time my mom passed away and I couldn't watch it.
Yeah, it was one of our dad's, like just all time favorite.
One of Dad's top five. Yeah. It's one of my like top tens.
I think the last time I actually watched it was maybe the second time I ever saw it. And it was when it came out on DVD because Dad bought it. And so, because we watched it in the theaters and then we watched it one more time on DVD. And then I just decided that it was an absolutely brilliant movie that I could just never, ever watch again.
There's two movies in my top tens. There's two movies in my top tens that I can't watch any more than once every 5 years or 10 years or so. Schindler's List and What Dreams May Come. Those two movies, I just can't watch them any more than like once a decade. They're just too emotionally grueling for me to get through.
For me, Schindler's List, I could watch anytime, personally.
They just tear me up too much. It's not that, I mean, they're in my top 10. Schindler's List, one of my top five, you know, I just can't do it. It just tears me up. I spend too much time after feeling like fucking garbage, you know, cause they're just so weighty and they're incredibly weighty.
They're heavy.
Yeah.
And I don't, with the way Robin Williams passed away, I don't know that I can bring myself to watch What Dreams May Come again.
Yeah. Actually, I think JJ and I were talking about it. JJ? Yeah, we were talking about it in the room just a little bit. Yeah. Brilliant movie. Mm-hmm. Love it. Beautiful movie. He was amazing in it.
I cried every
time I watched it.
Same here. I think about it.
I cry. I see a picture from that movie. Mm-hmm. I cry. And now, especially with what happened, I will probably never, ever watch that movie again. Because I don't think I could bring myself to it.
Mm-hmm. I never saw a performance from an entire cast that exuded pure love. Each and every one. And it's something that I envied. It's something that I wanted for myself, but I couldn't bring myself to feel because of the, as you said, how devastated I was at the time when I first saw it. But I'll probably see it again and probably be a blubbering mess again.
Yeah. Powerful film will do that.
Yeah.
So we had the honor of speaking with addiction survivor and spiritual healer Roy Nelson tonight. So that's coming up on the podcast. Our good friend Megan Hayes rejoined us tonight to share her thoughts on Robin Williams' passing. So that's coming up. And Carla Van Wagener and Solomon from the Random Radio Podcast also join us later tonight as we continue our memorial
on
Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. And Brian joins us for those interviews as well. So just devastated.
Yeah.
There's just no two ways about it.
Ever since I got the news, I feel like my chest is heavy.
Yeah.
And I'm serious. I don't get like affected by celebrities dying. There's, you know, it's sad. Yes, this is sad, but this one hurts. Yeah. And how he died or what is not even like the reason it hurts. The fact that he's gone is what hurts. Mm-hmm. The fact that I just spent a whole this past TV season watching him on TV again and just dying of laughter.
And happy to see him on TV.
And so happy to see him on TV. And I like that they put the outtakes at the end of every show and just watching him play and watching the other actors play. And I was just happy. I was happy again. I like seeing him, and it was something I can always Make Me Smile was Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. And now he's gone, and I'm very heartbroken.
I have a quote here that I found on HuffingtonPost.com. It's from President Barack Obama,
mm-hmm.
his reaction. If you just indulge me for a moment. Robin Williams was an airman, a doctor, a genie, a nanny, a president, a professor, a bangarang, Peter Pan, and everything in between. But he was one of a kind. He arrived in our lives as an alien, but ended up touching every element of the human spirit. He made us laugh. He made us cry. He gave us immeasurable talent freely and generously to those who needed it the most, from our troops stationed abroad to the marginalized on our own streets. The Obama family offers our condolences to Robin's family, his friends, and everyone who found their voice and their verse thanks to Robin Williams. Just sums it up for me.
Morgan Mindy co-star Pam Dauber, she simply said, "I'm completely and totally devastated. What more can be said?"
Yeah.
She just acted in an episode with him on the Crazy Ones.
Crazy Ones, yeah.
Yeah. So... Teresa, thanks for joining us tonight.
And it was
sharing,
hard.
Sharing your thoughts.
I was trying to find some way to get out of it.
Steve, thanks for coming down and joining us tonight.
Thanks for inviting me.
And here is Robin Williams' speech from Dead Poets Society as portrayed through the Apple ad that came out recently. The audio is cleaner on this ad than it is in the clips of the movie that I could find. So here's, what's your verse?
We don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race, and the human race is filled with passion. Medicine, law, business, engineering. These are noble pursuits necessary to sustain life. But poetry, beauty, romance, love. These are what we stay alive for. To quote from Whitman, "O me, O life of the questions of these recurring. Of the endless trains of the faithless, of cities filled with the foolish. What good amid these, O me, O life? Answer that you are here, that life exists and identity. That the powerful play goes on and you may contribute a verse. That the powerful play goes on and you may contribute a verse. What will your verse be?"
And now we're going to go to Roy Nelson. He's a leading addiction survivor and spiritual healer. He's the author of the forthcoming book, Love Notes from Hell, Stories of Hopeless Addiction, Obsessions, and Recovery. It's due out October 14th. And he's got an addictive personality quiz on his website that I'm sure he would recommend a lot of people take and see. Roy, you there?
Yes, sir. I sure am. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Wish we could be talking to you under better circumstances than mourning.
Totally agree.
Robin Williams. It's a terrible situation. Brian and myself and Steve, we've mentioned on the show before that we're all addicts of one variety or another, mm-hmm. and we've all struggled with similar things to what Robin has struggled with over time. What are your thoughts on how it could go so wrong for someone?
Well, I personally, I've been blessed to have had so many addictions and hopeless obsessions and compulsions that there's no way on earth I could overcome them. At, you know, there's not enough programs, there's not enough places I could go to try to treat each one of them. So in my particular case, I had to go really deep into my psyche, really, really deep into my soul, and excavate that. I had to go below the level of the addiction in order to be free, because, and it's all grace, you know, it's not any good thing I've done or good management on my part. I'm just, because I've been driven to go deep, not by virtue, but I've been driven to go deep in order to make peace with myself so that I could be free of all of them. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, you know, there's never just one, and one leads to another, you know. So it's just, unfortunately, so many people seem to think that the addiction is the problem.
It's just a symptom of a problem.
It seems like it is. Well, precisely, and to the truth be known, the addiction is what we use to try to cope with the problem.
Right.
But unfortunately, so many of us think that the addiction is the problem, and so we think we get a death grip on the addiction and we're cool. But it just, unfortunately, you know, life goes on, and we, you know, life can be a harsh teacher, you mm-hmm. know. I mean, especially when you're riding at the top, when you have everything on earth that you can imagine that would make you happy. For me, that's what happened for me. I was at the top of my game. I mean, I was raised in poverty and, you know, all kinds of terrible, you know, circumstances. And I knew, man, if I made a lot of money or if I had, you know, a lot of sex or a lot of, you know what I mean? If I could have that, I'd be happy. You know what I mean? But in my experience, the real heartbreak comes, you know, when you're living by that self-propulsion, self-will, that type of thing. The real heartbreak comes when you get what you thought you wanted. You know, and that's seemingly the case. I mean, recently, you know, there's another famous person who died, and, you know, he was at top of his game, absolutely top of his game. And, you know, Mr. Williams, you know, I mean, God bless him. You know, everybody knows how successful he was in his life. And it's just such an insidious condition. It's just tragic.
Well, and I find that interesting. I find it interesting because I noticed, you know, perusing Twitter and Facebook this afternoon, so many people writing, you know, how unfortunate it was that somebody with so much success and so much to be thankful for mm-hmm. could be so depressed and feel so alone. And a lot of people just completely don't understand how that could happen. Because, you know, supposedly when we get everything that we ever wished for, you know, everything should be all roses and blue skies, but that's not the way depression works. It's not the way addiction works. A couple people posted things like, if only he knew how much he touched all the lives around the world and could see all this outpouring, mm-hmm. you know, he'd have known he wasn't alone. I don't think it's that he doesn't know.
No, he
it's just
knew.
That none of that matters.
No.
In the end,
right. I totally agree.
To the depression, to the root cause of whatever it is that was his demon, you know.
I totally agree. Now, the other thing, you know, the other thing in my experience. Now, first off, I want to qualify my success. Success is a relative term. For me, where I came from, what I did, you know, I should experience some success, but obviously nothing like, you know, like Robin Williams or any of the other people we're, you know, maybe talking about here. But yeah, I totally agree with you. And the other part is, you know, back a number of years ago, when John Denver passed, you know, and obviously he passed from a, you know, his plane crashing, but, you know, he was one of us, you know, and, you know, I read some of that he had written prior to his passing, and he was very depressed about, you know, he couldn't, you know, he was on TV all before and always, you know, in the limelight. And toward the end of his life, even though he was a young man, he couldn't get it. He couldn't buy it. He couldn't buy a spot on TV. You know what I mean? It's just like, mm-hmm. you know, when you know, popularity can it's so fickle. You know what I mean? And one day you're at the top, you know, you're in the limelight. And the next day you're obscure. You know, of course, Mr. Williams obviously had a long, 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 long life of success, but I don't know. It's just, you know, you can't really ever know what's going through someone's mind at the time. But I know in my experience, anytime I got so much, so many good feelings from the from my business prowess, if you will, that, you know, anytime something project came to an end or something like that, I'd experience a lot of depression. Mm-hmm. You know, so I just don't know. We don't know what he was, you know, what he was thinking or feeling. But God bless him. I feel so sad for him. You know, for his family and all everyone. You know.
Well, what would be your advice to family members of people who are battling depression or battling addictions? Because being that kind of third party, that person who wants to help, what are some of the avenues you would suggest in approaching? Helping somebody who's struggling with those sorts of things.
Well, you know, the one thing that I often teach when I'm sharing with people or family members or business people who may be in touch with someone who may be one of us, you know, I say you don't have to go confront somebody because many times addicts don't want to believe they're addicts or they don't want to think, they don't want to be confronted that they're addicts. And the reason the work I do, I tell people you don't need to confront anybody about it, and you don't even have to mention anything like treatment or rehab or anything like that because they don't want to hear about that either. You can say something like, I've met this man who's had many of these same types of problems, who's been blessed to have overcome them, and who has devoted his life to try to help other people overcome those things too, who would be happy to hear from you and happy to visit with you.
So really trying to connect more than dictate.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And it's not threatening. It's no, you know, no, it's just, you know, you don't have to. And the other thing is, of course, you know, what I do is completely under the radar. I mean, nobody ever needs to know anything about what we're doing, you know, as far as anybody getting help or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's, you know, it's not easy for a person, because naturally, we only hear about the famous ones. We don't hear about the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of others who die from this condition on a regular basis, you know, except we hear from about the famous ones, you know, and the mm-hmm. ones that are close to us and that type of thing. But, yeah, it just, I don't know. I'm just, you know, it's we just, you know, we're all doing all we can, and I'm happy to hear from anyone anytime. And there's not any time that we wouldn't be really happy to hear from anyone. And the other thing is family and family members and loved ones, invariably they want to know what they can do. And invariably I tell them, you need to get some help for yourself, you know, because oftentimes that'll make it easier for the addict to get help, you know, if the person who's closest to them can relax a little bit, you know, so.
Well, even putting yourself in the position where you're the caretaker for somebody can become a bit of an addiction for yourself too.
Absolutely. I've heard people who were caretakers and they were sicker than the addict, you know what I mean? But again, I mean, you know, I wouldn't say that myself about anyone like that, but I've heard people say that themselves, that, you know, that you know, they're like the addict's addicted to the addiction and you're addicted to the addict, you know. So mm-hmm. Not easy. It's not easy for anyone. I grew up in the disease. You know, my dad, you know, he was a good man. He was a good man, but he was sick and he needed, you know, it was absolutely tragic. But everybody loved him. Everybody he ever worked for said he was the best worker they ever had, you know. And
well,
go ahead.
On your website, you have a quiz for people to find out if they have an addictive personality. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, I do. Yes, sir, I sure do. It's roynelsonhealing.com/ quiz. Yeah, and that'll give there's some good questions on there for a person to determine whether they might have a personality, you know, an addictive personality, because to me, that's what has to be overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And that literally, you know, and that's because otherwise it's, you know, for me, the person I was would always have the problems I had. And mm-hmm. in order to not have those problems, and certainly in life, we're always going to have problems, you know, but my, you know, because that's how we grow usually. But I'm just saying for me, that I had to be transformed. I had to have a total transformation. And you know, as you well know, there's no cure, but you can be healed. You know, and from the, you know, my experience, we have the Nelson method. We call the Nelson method is literally a process for helping people feel safe enough to be able to see things within themselves and within their lives and circumstances, people, circumstances in their lives that need to be looked at, so that they can then get themselves out of the way so that they can align themselves with that sweet spirit that resides deep within them, which, as you well know, is the only hope of overcoming this condition. It requires a total personality change.
And I think that I think that's something a lot of people don't really understand when they're dealing with people battling depression and people battling addiction, is that stopping that is just a beginning of a process that is all encompassing to a full lifestyle change. I mean, people talk about dieters. Dieters are kind of the same way. You can be addicted to dieting, but until you actually make a lifestyle change, the diets don't last.
Or addicted to food.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
well, sure. Well, I was morbidly obese myself, and I've worked with a lot of obese people, and also people with eating disorders who aren't obese, but a lot of times a person will fight harder to try to fight 10 pounds than they will 100 pounds, you know? So, but again, there's no, you know, all over the country, all over the world, people are trying to treat those symptoms of the eating problem, but they don't want to, they don't realize that they're going to have to address what's eating them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in my experience is, every, you know, every addiction has three main components. And has, you know, one, number one, it's a painkiller. You know, it's you get a relief. It's a painkiller. It's a form of escape. And it's a form of punishment. And as long as I had the pain, I was going to crave the painkiller in one form or another.
Right.
As long as I had the fear, I was going to require escape. As long as I had the guilt, I was going to require punishment. And so my experience is I had to face these. Now, nobody can do this alone, as you know that.
Right.
Nobody can do it alone. And this is what I do. I specialize in helping people who literally can't get the help they need by any other means. Usually have tried everything, and sometimes they haven't, but it's just to help them feel safe enough to go deeper within themselves, within their heart, where the problem centers. So, you know, it breaks my heart when people. I mean, you know, my new book is dedicated to the families and loved ones of those who have died from this condition. And to those who are still out there suffering, not knowing that they can be totally free.
Well, here's hoping that more people can learn the lessons of finding help and seeking help from Robin's passing. And maybe some good in some way can come from that.
Yeah, I sure hope so. We're certainly going to miss him. You know, we love him, and God bless, you know, God bless his family and loved ones, and you know, everybody loves him. Nobody, I don't think he's got an enemy in the world, probably, you know.
Certainly not on this podcast.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, not about what I mean. I don't, you know, if he had any idea. I mean, it's heartbreaking, you know, that we get so into such despair that we think that's the only way out.
Yeah.
And I've been there, you know. Mm-hmm. I totally, you know, I mean, I just. So anyway, but God bless us all.
Well, God bless you, Roy. Thank you for joining us on the show tonight. And, you know, good luck with your book. It comes out October 14th. Again, people can pre-order that from your website, roynelsonhealing.com. And they can also take the addictive personality quiz, roynelsonhealing.com/quiz. So thanks again, Roy.
Thank you so.
God bless and have a great night.
Thank you so much for having. thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate you, and I just want to reiterate, it's all great. Not good management on Roy Nelson's part. It's all great.
All right, Roy. Thank you.
Thanks, Roy.
Thank you, sir. Be well. Be well.
You too. Bye. We also received an email tonight from Nicole Coates, the EVP of Partnerships at Planet.eco. She just wanted to say these few words about Robin. The world is sad this evening because a talented actor and comedian is no longer with us. Robin had a way to make people of all ages smile and giggle, letting the struggles of their world fade away, like they were small, innocent children. He did this for us, but could not do it for himself. His legacy will live on forever through his work and the relationships he created with others, from the other actors and comedians he worked with, to those that had the pleasure of growing up watching his work, to the soldiers he entertained throughout the years overseas. He touched so many. He will be truly missed. Nicole, thank you for sharing that thought with us on the episode tonight. And here's another clip of Robin Williams being a genius.
You know, I was on this plane once, and I'm sitting there, and captain gets on, he does this whole, you know, we'll be cruising at 35,000 feet, but then he puts the mic down, he forgets to turn it off. Mm-hmm. And so he turns to the co-pilot, he's like, you know, all I could use right now is a fucking blowjob and a cup of coffee. So the stewardess fucking goes bombing up from the back of the plane to tell him that the microphone's still on. This guy in the back of the plane's like, hey, hon, don't forget the coffee.
You ever been on a plane?
No, but it's a fucking joke. It works better if I tell it in the first person.
Yeah, it does.
I have been late, you know.
Really?
Good for you. Big time.
Big time, huh?
I went on a date last week.
How'd it go?
It was good.
You going out again?
I don't know.
Why not?
I haven't called her.
Christ, you're an amateur.
I know what I'm doing. Don't worry about me. I know what I'm doing. Yeah, but this girl's like, you know, beautiful. She's smart. She's fun. It's different from most of the girls I've been with.
So call her up, Romeo.
Why? So I can realize she's not that smart, that she's fucking boring? You know, I mean, you don't... This girl's like fucking perfect right now. I don't want to ruin that.
Maybe you're perfect right now. Maybe you don't want to ruin that. But I think that's a super philosophy, Will. That way you can go through your entire life without ever having to really know anybody. My wife used to fart when she was nervous.
She had all sorts of wonderful little idiosyncrasies. You know, she used to fart in her sleep. I'm sorry I shared that with you. One night it was so loud it woke the dog up. She woke up and got like, oh, was that you? I said, yeah, I didn't have the heart to tell her. Oh, God.
She woke herself up. Yes.
Oh, Christ. But Will, she's been dead 2 years, and that's the shit I remember. Wonderful stuff, you know? Little things like that.
Yeah, but those are the things I miss the most. The little idiosyncrasies that only I knew about. That's what made her my wife. Oh, and she had the goods on me, too. She knew all my little peccadillos. People call these things imperfections, but they're not. Oh, that's the good stuff. And then we get to choose who we let into our weird little worlds. You're not perfect, sport. And let me save you the suspense. This girl you met, she isn't perfect either. But the question is whether or not you're perfect for each other. That's the whole deal. That's what intimacy is all about. Now, you can know everything in the world, sport, but the only way you're finding out that one is by giving it a shot. You certainly won't learn from an old fucker like me. Even if I did know, I wouldn't tell a piss ant like you.
Now, why not? You told me every other fucking thing. Jesus Christ. Fucking talk more than any shrink I ever seen in my life.
I teach this shit. I didn't say I know how to do it. Yeah.
You ever think about getting remarried?
My wife's dead.
Hence the word remarried.
She's dead.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a super philosophy, Sean. I mean, that way you could actually go through the rest of your life without ever really knowing anybody.
Time's up.
Megan?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm sitting here with Brian and Steve.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Oh, been better.
Bad time, right?
Yeah.
Brian was a huge, huge Robin Williams fan.
Fourth grade, 1982. I was a member of the Robin Williams fan club.
You were?
Uh-huh.
That's so cool.
He was on the cover of one of those teen magazines. I got the magazine, found how to, you know, become a member of his fan club, had a signed autographed headshot postcard that said, remember the Undertoad from World According to Garp. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it was actually addressed to Brian. That was awesome. I so wish I still had that. But I was a total Robin Williams head with the suspenders and the t-shirts and the buttons. And
Same.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I still, well, it's back in Atlanta, and I just changed my profile picture on Facebook, but I still have a working mini lunchbox.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good, right? Oh, yeah, the suspenders. I lived in those things.
Yeah.
Right? With the little, I had the Nanu Nanu t-shirt with, it was like the crazy glitter.
Yes. Yeah, those
iron-on glitter kind of deal.
Oh, yeah.
With rainbows everywhere.
With his face on it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's been working Mindy on. Oh my! I was like, he was my first celebrity crush, like ever. Like huge. And I had for a very long time till I was like, God, late teens, huge crush. Like my best friend called me today to see if I was okay because he's like, I know how you love him.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you're my current celebrity crush. Any girl who says her first celebrity crush is Robin Williams is like,
that's
way
awesome.
Okay with me.
Yes. And you quote a lot of our geeky movies as well.
Thereafter, so, you know, I like funny boys.
He's the best.
He was the best. He influenced me in comedy. Huge influence on me to be a comedian. I was constantly quoting him, constantly trying to copy him, and then I had to try to find my own voice.
Mm-hmm.
But I would try to get everything that I could on him, listen to everything that he did. I mean, I went back and saw stuff that he did before Mork and Mindy,
mm-hmm.
that he was on a reboot of Roland Martin's Laugh-In, that he was on the Richard Pryor show. He was a bit player on that. He roasted Richard Pryor, which even if you watch it today, you'll wet yourself because it is just
hilarious
just to watch his mind and his idol Jonathan Winters watching the two of them together. I mean, it was like you're watching two supernova, you know, implode in comic genius is just the best way to describe it. I mean, I was watching MSNBC today and they just showed this home movie between Robin Williams and Jonathan Winters. And Robin Williams was just going off as Robin Leach, doing a Robin Leach impersonation and just talking about how wonderful it is.
Oh, his Robin Leach was so good too.
And
oh my God,
Jonathan Winters just looking at him and saying, let's show us you're the palatial estate. And just Jonathan Winters just goes, well, the bodies are buried over there. it's amazing to watch Robin Williams get crack up. And who can make Robin Williams laugh other than Jonathan Winters? It's just amazing.
Of course.
So funny. So what were some of your favorite performances of Robin's, Megan?
Gosh, that's a good question. Because I was looking at his IMDb, and so many, there's so many names, you know. Because I was like looking through, and like, oh my God, I forgot about Aladdin. Like I was obsessed with Aladdin.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I had a lot of fun going through finding clips for tonight's show. So I'm gonna put a bunch of stuff in. And I spent all afternoon watching Robin Williams clips.
Oh God, did you? I think when I get off the phone with you guys, I'm gonna watch Dead Poets Society. I think I have to.
Yes.
Yeah.
God. I'm gonna cheer up right now.
So good.
Well, I was reminded of Dead Poets Society just a few weeks back because Apple used the "What's Your Verse" monologue in their latest round of ads. And I remember hearing Robin's voice in the Apple ad, and I went, "Oh my God, I forgot all about that speech. That movie's brilliant."
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you know, I was just thinking about, because I, like, I think 2 nights ago watched Field of Dreams. And didn't they come out at the same time?
Yeah. Yeah, it was around the same time.
Sure they did.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
I
because it was
a kid and, like, sneaking into movie theaters and all at the same time we're seeing Batman.
It was
Deadpool and Field of Dreams all in the same summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that was a crying jag week for me seeing Dead Poets and also Field of Dreams.
Exactly. Oh my God! Right, they were. I'm guaranteed. I'm like 95% sure. I too remember sobbing. Oh God, an awakening.
David mentioned mother-in-law, David's mother mentioned today, What Dreams May Come. And that's such a...
That was great, too.
That's such an emotional movie.
It's a visceral response for me for that, because that movie came out the same time my own mother passed away, and I could not watch it. And it took me about a good 2 years before I would watch that movie. And I was just a blubbering mass watching it. It was just...
Well, that movie... I think is going to be so poignant to watch now too, because of how he has passed on. Because its central theme is around forgiving suicide. And
well, and all, I mean, Dead Poets too, because Robert Sean Lennon's character committed suicide. That was one of the first ones I thought of. Oh God. So it's really, I find it really just absolutely heartbreaking.
Well, it's funny when you talk about Robin Williams, everybody goes, oh, he was so funny. He was such a funny guy. And he brought so much joy. But honestly, he was one of the best dramatic actors we've had.
Yes.
Good Will Hunting, Academy Award.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yes. You know, and that seems to be the part that a lot of people forget at first. You know?
Fisher King.
Oh, yes. God. Yeah.
Oh, Fisher King. Amazing. Yeah. Oh, I remember my mom. Sorry.
No.
Go ahead, Megan.
I was gonna say I remember making my mom take me, like, way too young, begging her to take me to see Good Morning Vietnam.
Oh yeah.
And like back when like you had to wait. Remember when you had to like wait in line like around the block to get tickets to a movie? Mm-hmm. And like, oh God, he's incredible in that. I mean, he's hilarious, but like heartbreaking.
Yeah, that movie especially is such a balance of the comedy and the drama.
That was one of his, it wasn't his first one, but it was one of his, you know, really good at getting both of those pieces together. One of my favorites, I was just looking through, was Hook. And I remember that particularly because that was the year I graduated high school.
Right.
I was going into college. I was a computer science major, was going to be an Air Force pilot. I was in ROTC. But I was having like some kind of identity crisis. And after seeing Hook, I realized that, because I was at the same age my parents were when I was conceived. And I was like, I can't imagine. I'm in college. I can't imagine having a kid. And then seeing Hook, it's like, I was like, okay, I don't have necessarily have to have a kid. I can be more of a kid and be around kids. And I actually changed my major at that point to elementary education with theater emphasis and decided I was going to teach theater to kids.
And that was around the time he met me.
Yeah. And then I met David, changed to lighting design in the theater. And here we are. But Hook,
that's a
Hook
good story.
Thanks. But yeah, even you're right. Looking through his IMDb, you know, it's like, oh, Dead Again. Little bitty bet part. If anybody remembers.
Oh, and that's right.
He was shop, I'm looking at Steve. He was the shop owner or manager that talked to Kenneth Branagh about In the Freezer. He was like the psychiatrist who like owned a butcher shop or something like
that.
Dead Again is that's he's
oh
like,
my God, 1 hour photo.
Oh, that was the creepiest, the absolute creepiest.
Oh my God, he was amazing in that movie.
Oh, there was one.
This, I mean, it's prolific.
Just recently I saw an indie film that he did that is just absolutely funny, is the last Angry Man in Brooklyn, and it's with him and Peter Dinklage and a huge cast.
I saw that.
James Earl Jones is in it, and it just absolutely steals the movie. You have got to see this movie. And what's amazing is that he's dying in the movie, and he dies at the end, and it's just incredible. This roller coaster that he goes on in this film.
There's
I was going to skip watching the next night at the museum because it looks really stupid. But now I want to see it because it's one of the last performances.
That and three other films that are going to be coming out with him. Yeah. So it's just...
He was in the talks for, you know, in the works for Mrs. Doubtfire, too.
They already had a first draft.
Things like that. But at the same time, his show got canceled. So that's got to be tough. I was looking at also.
Is that what happened? The crazy ones get canceled.
Yeah,
it did.
It only lasted a season.
It got canceled, and then like a few weeks later, a week later, they made that announcement that he'd gone back into rehab.
Yeah.
I heard about that, but not the show.
It sounds like he was having a very difficult summer.
There's an interesting independent film that you guys probably haven't seen that you should with Roman Reeves called The Final Cut. It's foreign. I want to say it's like Dutch or something, the people that made it, but it's a sci-fi kind of futuristic that people are implanted with a recording device, like right after they're born. And it records their memories. And once they die, someone is charged with sitting down and making a memorial service video from their memories. So they have to sit there and watch, and it's whatever they saw through their entire lives through their own eyes, all bad, all good, everything. And Robin Williams is the guy who has to sit and watch the raw footage, essentially, of someone's life and create a memorial video. And it's really crazy.
Oh, my God.
It's really creepy. You should see it.
He made amazing choices as a performer.
Yeah, he did.
Yes.
He was just an amazing actor and just, I mean, hilarious. And even like, I don't know if you guys saw his interview on Inside the Actors Studio.
I was watching that this afternoon.
It's incredible.
Absolutely amazing. James Lipton couldn't get to the questions.
No.
At all, because Robin, he just asked him one question and says, how does your mind work? And says, well, let me show you.
Oh, yeah, when he went off.
And he went off, he grabbed this scarf from this woman.
Oh, yeah, and he was like the dish, like the going through the washer, the car wash, right?
Yes.
I haven't seen it probably in years and years, but oh, my God, so funny, so good.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking about that this afternoon. I was like, I got to hunt down that episode.
I remember stumbling upon an episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Oh.
And I think this was done. It wasn't done too long ago. But I mean, quite a few years. But
it was in the Drew Carey years.
Yeah, the Drew Carey years. And he had white hair. I don't know what he had white hair from. Maybe from 1 hour photo. But that was a long time ago. But he was just like random guest appearance. And it was brilliant. It was so good. He's got that mind where he can always be on, and that's got to be tough too. I imagine that's part of the what leads to, you know, some of the depression and stuff, is you feel like you always have to be on.
Well, he was battling bipolar.
I was gonna say, wasn't he bipolar, right?
And I know from my own experience being a bipolar person that when you're up.
Oh yeah.
You know,
definitely.
And and when you're down, you're trying to find that up again really, really badly.
Because for, you know, every Good Morning Vietnam, there's a World's Greatest Dad or an Old Dogs
or RV
RV Man of the Year.
Oh, Man of the Year was good.
Was it?
I love that one. That was very good.
Okay.
What was the one with the android? Bicentennial Man?
Bicentennial Man. I love that one.
I had to see that because...
What was the one with Tim Robbins where he was a car salesman?
Cadillac Man.
Cadillac Man.
That's right. I like that one too.
That was crazy.
Also, some of his dramatic ones was Jacob the Liar. Where he was in Poland during the Holocaust.
Yeah.
You look at his IMDb and you just can't believe his IMDb page is probably completely indicative of his bipolar nature.
right, no, that's
incredibly high, crazy comedy and just as deep and dramatic, low, heavy pieces as well.
And from the very beginning, World According to Garp was incredibly heavy.
Oh my God, Garp. I was going to see John Lithgow do King Lear this weekend at Shakespeare in the Park in New York. And I was just like, I've just been thinking about The World According to Garp is an amazing movie. And he was amazing in that.
And that was his second film after Popeye. Popeye was his first film.
Oh, my God.
Shit, I forgot about Popeye. Oh, my God. I love Popeye.
He was brilliant as Popeye.
I love that movie.
I watched that movie again recently. It is so perfect. It is perfect.
I was olive oil for Halloween, 2 Halloweens ago.
Really? Oh,
I was super skinny because I was on that diet for Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. So I was like, no better time to be olive oil than now.
Yep, that'll do it.
While I'm anorexic, might as well capitalize on it.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
Well, Megan, thanks for joining us tonight. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me. Are you kidding me? Like, he was, I literally, my very first crush. And, like, I remember, I told you guys, making my mom, like, rent stuff and get stuff and take me to stuff at my age I shouldn't have been going to. But I was, like, I remember after Good Morning Vietnam, I was, like, he needs to be my boyfriend. Like, that was all I wanted for him to be my boyfriend.
That was 87.
Well, it's funny, you know, I remember my dad when I was a kid, he wouldn't let me watch Eddie Murphy Raw, but he'd let me watch any stand-up of Robin Williams, which was, I think, 10 times worse.
An evening at the Met.
That's amazing. I remember asking my mom to rent that, and she thought, oh, he's Mork. So,
yeah, sure, exactly.
Like, she didn't research it. So she's like, oh, sure, it'll be fine.
Yeah, and I saw Good Morning Vietnam at the theater with my dad.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Twice, because we missed so many of the jokes the first time because everyone was laughing through the movie.
That's why I think Robin Williams movies are so successful. People have to see it a second time because they missed the jokes because they were laughing so much.
So I imagine it was very, very difficult to direct the man, though. You know, just he was like,
just gotta let him go.
Yeah, he was just a big ball of energy.
There's a
how could you keep a straight face acting with him? I swear that that's really Matt Damon laughing in Good Will Hunting when Robin Williams is telling the story about his
That's so real.
Yes,
so real.
Up, right?
Yeah.
Well, that was one thing I did like about the Crazy Ones.
Yeah, the new show.
They showed outtakes during the credits every episode. Mm-hmm. And
them just riffing and busting
him riffing and everybody just on set, the crew included, all just cracking up.
That one guy, the young guy with the eyes, I was so envious of him to be able to act right next to Robin Williams and just be able to go off and try to be even just a glimmer of Robin Williams. And he did a good job, but that's such a shadow.
Yeah, probably the one thing I found the most fascinating was watching Sarah Michelle Gellar figure out how to be funny over the course of the season.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't funny at the beginning, but she was funny towards the end. She figured it out.
Did you watch the show, Megan?
I didn't.
Megan's too busy trying to get onto this.
Hey, I completely understand. Sometimes you gotta pick and choose.
There's also on YouTube, you should look this up, is Robin Williams on the Carol Burnett Show.
Oh.
He was on the Carol Burnett Show? No way.
He did. He was a guest on the Carol Burnett Show, and they did this sketch, and then he said, I want to do it again, but this time I want to go off script. And the look on Carol Burnett's face and Carol trying to keep a straight face during the whole thing, this thing is just true.
Oh, I got to
absolute
watch that. I had
pure
no idea.
Robin Williams riffing. It is just amazing.
We'll have to find that. Put a link on the site.
Like, I remember when Steve Martin was a guest on Carol Burnett?
Yes.
Yeah, I can't believe that. I mean, I thought I knew all the things.
Well, hey, Megan, before we let you go, you're gonna be on an upcoming TV series that we all like, right?
Huh?
Would that be Sleepy Hollow?
Yeah.
Oh, that
show is really good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we love it. I don't know if Steve loves
it.
Steve's kind of grumpy guy in the group. But
grumpy. It's just
everybody else here loves
Steve. Needs convincing on most of the shows.
It's not convincing. It's just time. I watch 400 channels of TV a day.
I can't keep up.
Isn't it a good one, guys? It's a really good one.
It really is. What do you know what episodes you're going to be in?
I think I am. I'm pretty sure I'm season two, episode four. I play an officer.
Nice.
And Officer Dana Dobbs. And the season premieres September 22nd, so I'm guessing this episode's going to be around Halloween, which is awesome.
<That's> cool. Fitting for Sleepy Hollow.
And I can't tell you, but it's yet another very scary. They're really good. I mean, I find that show terrifying, and the episode's really a frightening one. Nice.
Yeah, I watch it with my sister Teresa, and we have a really good time sitting watching that show together. And we're super psyched that you're going to be on.
We were just glad when he got
new clothes. At all the season ender of season one. Did you see that at all? I'm sure you probably did. I'm just silly, but I didn't see, you know, the guy being the guy.
I actually haven't watched the very last episode, so we're in that boat together.
Oh, I'm going to shut my mouth now. You need to email me immediately. I don't care what time of day it is. After you watch it, email me right away, and I just want to know what you think. I want to know all thoughts, feelings, fears, hopes, dreams.
You got yourself a deal.
It's really good. You're just shit, man. So
I guess I'm going to have to watch the show now.
I think so.
I have a friend in the same episode I'm in is playing Benedict Arnold, and which is when do you get to say that my friend is playing Benedict Arnold?
That's cool. In a modern TV show, that's cool.
That's really cool.
I will tell you this, Steve. You'll watch the show, and after about three episodes, you'll be thinking to yourself, why don't they give him new clothes? He eventually gets new clothes. Just don't worry.
He does, but then he hates them.
Yeah, he does hate them. But that was our biggest thing when we first started watching the show.
I was very happy they at least addressed it.
Every time we first started watching the show, every episode, come on. You got to give him some different clothes. This is ridiculous. This is 2014.
No, don't do it.
And they gave him some
idiot. Don't do it. He is so dreamy. I couldn't talk to him. He was so nice to me, and I ran away like a seventh grader.
You start writing his name on your notebook.
Can I tell you this story really quick? Okay, we're in my scene is with Abby Mills, not with Ichabod Crane. We're all in the craft services food line. You know, it's like a buffet, so you're on either side of the table, and I'm we're right across from each other, and I'm looking down at my tray, seventh grade. I'm look up at the guy and say hello. He's right across the buffet line from you. So then we keep grabbing for the same food.
Did you share a ladle?
And then in my mind, what did you say?
Did you share a ladle?
No, but every time we grab for the food, in my mind, I'm oh my God, we're soulmates. We're eating the same food. And in my mind, just look up at the man and say hello. So finally, on the third time we both grab for the same food, I look up and he is super tall and he looks down at me and he's all British and dressed like Ichabod Crane. He's and he goes, hello. And I looked up at him, slightly gasped and froze. And then I was and then I looked at him and I went, hi. And then I looked down at my tray something was really important in my food on the tray. And then I ran away.
You could have swore you saw Robin Williams.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, that's beautiful.
This is why I have problems when it comes to movies.
Being a celebrity is tough. It's grueling. You have to be around other celebrities, and it's very tough.
Yeah, especially when they start fawning over you and running away.
I can't talk to them. I have problems with celebrities. I can't talk. I want to talk to them so badly, and then I can't. But then I did have a conversation with a woman who's on House of Cards is now on Sleepy Hollow, and she and I were talking about something, and then after I did my scene, she complimented my acting, so I was okay. Well, she's complimenting my acting, so I'm going to compliment her acting. That's what I went for it, which I never do. But I was hey, oh, by the way, not to be a total geek or anything, but your character is one of my favorite ones on House of Cards. And she goes, no way. And I went, way. And that was that.
Yay. And a moment was had.
Yes.
That's awesome.
You BFFs now? So you BFFs now? You're going to be doing each other's hair?
No. But she was the fact that I actually could say something to her a half normal human being was miraculous.
That's awesome.
Baby steps, people. Baby steps.
Right. Okay, that's right. Well, Megan, thanks for joining us tonight. And we definitely want to get you back on for a full episode.
It's nice to talk to you.
Yeah.
It's always nice to talk to you. We're definitely going to get you back on for another episode.
Oh, yeah. No, it's happening. After I get back from New York on the 20th. So it's happening.
Excellent.
Awesome.
And everybody can.
I'm going to spot you. So.
And everybody can check you out and more information about you at meganhaze.net, correct?
And the guy who designed my website is amazing.
I hear that about him.
You heard that about him.
He's all right. He's all right. He's all right.
No way.
Way.
I know. That's all I got. Celebrities talk to me. That's all I've got. No way, way. Or better that, I run away.
Hi.
Hi. And look at my tray. Like, there's some fucking interesting thing on my tray. Like, oh, this broccoli is riveting. Like, what the hell
is that? Is that my mom calling?
Are those onions in the meatloaf?
Yeah, oh my God, there's like gravy. Oh my God.
This gravy looks like Abraham Lincoln.
You should see
this. I have problems. I'm sure, I mean, hopefully, God willing, I will be acting with more and more celebrities and I'll have more and more of that. We just make like a thing, like Megan Hayes, awkwardness around celebrities podcast.
Well, that's a good idea. That's part of the reason why we started the podcast, so we can get more comfortable around celebrities as we go forward making movies.
We'll make it a bit. It'll be like
the more I work with people, the more stories I'll have to tell.
That's right. We'll make it every couple of weeks. We'll come back to you and find out what kind of awkward situations you were in this time. And
which means I'm working.
That's right. That's right.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you after the 20th.
Have a great night.
Thanks, Megan.
I'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay. Bye.
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 And here's Robin Williams in The Birdcage.
You're the director.
Thank you. This is a complex number full of mythic themes. The woman who is singing invented you. You are her fantasy. And suddenly, you, the fantasy, see her, your inventor, and she becomes your fantasy.
I don't think I get it. Try more gum.
Albert.
I hear you.
Thank you. I know you do. Celsius, you have to explore it. But let's start with the premise that when you see this stunning, smoldering creature, she transcends your desire to chew. She electrifies you. Something starts in your pelvis and works its way towards your heart, where it becomes heart/pelvis. Pop. Yes? Coming.
What about me? What do I do? Do I just stand here like an object?
No. You do an eclectic celebration of the dance. You do fussy, fussy, fussy. You do Martha Graham, Martha Graham, Martha Graham. Or Twyla, Twyla, Twyla. Or Michael Kidd, Michael Kidd, Michael Kidd, Michael Kidd. Or Madonna, Madonna, Madonna. But you keep it all inside.
Okay, so Carla and Solo have joined us to talk about Robin Williams. They're both calling in. So, hey guys, thanks for joining us tonight on the Intellectual Podcast.
No problem. Thanks
for inviting me. And Solomon, you're the young one of the entire network, so why don't we start with you? What's your first memory of Robin Williams?
My first memory would have to be actually at the animated movie that he was in, Fern Gully.
Oh gosh, yeah, he played the bat.
he played the bat in that one, and that was like one of the movies I would watch like constantly as a kid.
That's funny. Fern Gully is not one of those movies I don't think I've ever actually watched it.
No?
No.
Oh, it
came out the same year as Aladdin.
Amazing voices.
Yeah, now Aladdin I watched until my tape ran out.
Yeah. It was good. It was good. It was Don Bluth, I think, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting thing about Aladdin, you know, they didn't advertise that Robin Williams was in that movie because it came out around the same time, I believe, as Toys. Is that right? There was a conflict in the one studio had him first, and they didn't want to conflict with his fan base on what they would watch.
It did. 92.
Yeah.
So he was a bat.
Yeah,
he was a bat for you.
Same year.
He was an alien for me the first time I noticed him.
Yeah.
What about you, Carla?
The very first episode I ever saw him in was the original Happy Days.
Yep.
I'm old enough to actually see the original run.
So Steve.
So am I, Carla. So
yeah. But yeah, I mean, I watched Mork and Mindy from the very beginning. I think I watched almost every single episode, mm-hmm. as strange as it had gotten towards the end. But, you know, I basically just watched almost everything that he's ever done. There's a couple of things I haven't watched only because I thought he was so good in it that it freaked me out.
Like, really? 1 hour photo.
But yeah, that was just too creepy.
That was good.
The critic said that he was just brilliant in that, and I went,
that, yeah.
Yeah.
I went to see that movie by myself. It's one of the few times that I've gone to a movie alone, because at the time I couldn't find anybody who would go with me to watch it. And I sat through that movie just fucking terrified of Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. Like, he is so freaking creepy, man.
And I don't think he ever got nominated for anything to do with that film, which is amazing to me, because
yeah,
it
remember.
Was so good.
I don't remember if he was nominated or not for anything in that. Brian's looking it up.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was amazing in that movie. And then, and then of course, Good Will Hunting.
He was nominated for Best Actor Saturn Award, or he actually won in 2003 for that, for a 1 hour photo for Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films.
We certainly deserve that.
And he's got 4 Oscar nominations and 1 win with Good Will Hunting, Dead Poets Society, Fisher King, and Good Morning Vietnam.
Good Morning Vietnam.
Was nominated for World According to Garp. Mm-hmm. No,
World According to Garp, he didn't get a great reception when that movie came out.
Because a lot of people were...
I remember asking my dad about that, because I was a little young when Garp came out. But I remember asking my dad about that later on. I was like, I didn't know, because I said to my dad, I didn't know Robin Williams could be serious. Like, we were watching something later in my life. And my dad's like, are you kidding? He was in World According to Garp. He was amazing. I was like, I never heard about that. I'm like, did he win any awards? Guy. And my dad says, no, he was pretty much overlooked for it because nobody expected that from him.
Right, because he wasn't Robin Williams in it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't let him be.
Yeah.
No, I think that film also had a very hard time finding an audience. It was okay with the critics, but... Mm-hmm. I don't think it made a whole lot.
It was a little too deep.
A little too deep. His audience didn't really forgive him for doing that. They were hoping to see Robin Williams doing Robin Williams, and he was being dramatic.
Of course, in the long term for his career, probably the right choice, because he made the bold statement to everybody, I'm more than Mork.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's been at that time. He had been trying to escape from that because he did not want to be pigeonholed as Mork.
Well, and it's really interesting because we've been talking about Robin Williams all day. And at first, everybody's like, he's such a funny guy, But then when everybody starts talking about his work, they gravitate to Good Will Hunting, What Dreams May Come, Awakenings, Fisher King.
He and Christopher Reeve were roommates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean,
Juilliard.
It's like, yeah, he grabbed everybody's attention with comedy, but in the end, it was his dramatic acting is what's going to probably last the test of time.
Certainly.
And his performance as Aladdin. Well, once you're a Disney character, you never die.
Yeah. Well, actually, you do. But
everything okay, B?
B's wandering outside. So Solo, what else did you enjoy Robin in?
When I was younger too, I watched that. It's not like one of the more popular films, but that movie Jack.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
See, that's why I wanted Solo on today, because he's going to have a different perspective on the
movie. That was a start for, what was it? Jennifer Lopez was in that. Played his teacher.
Yeah, she's a teacher in that.
That's right.
Bill Cosby was in that?
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting. I was going through clips of stuff because I'm be rolling clips throughout this episode. But I did pull up some Dead Poets Society stuff. Do you remember the guys who played the kids in that
movie?
Oh, my
God. The kid who killed himself later on went on to House.
Yeah, he's on House.
Yeah, he's on House. He's the biggest. Ethan Hawke's in it. Ethan Hawke, I saw an interview with him saying he dropped out of college to do Dead Poets Society with Robin.
Wow.
Yeah, that would... I'd
have dropped out of college. Yeah. Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, that fascinating movie. Everyone remembers Robin Williams, but there's some really decent names in the younger boys in that movie, too.
Yeah.
And that was something that was interesting about Robin. He always was paired up with amazing other actors.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Yeah. You know?
I mean, I can't think really of very many movies that he was in where he didn't have an amazing supporting cast around him.
Just some of the independents where he was the name, like 1 hour photo.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, his latest independent film that he did, The Last Angry Man in Brooklyn, an amazing cast. You have, mm-hmm. you know, James Earl Jones in it. You have Peter Dinklage in it. My God, just cameo after cameo after cameo. I'm thinking, who else is not in this movie? What's her name? Brain fart, sorry.
that actress that was in that thing.
She was in Ted. Melissa Leo was in it. The girl played his doctor. Mila Kunis.
Mila Kunis. Yeah.
Mila Kunis is in it. CK is in it.
What about the Birdcage?
Oh my God!
Speaking of like crazy,
fussy,
great,
fussy.
Great action, and he was really the straight man almost in that movie, more so than the other people.
Well, yeah,
he was straight.
He was the straight man to Nathan Lane's zaniness,
right. Exactly.
Which was fascinating.
Yeah,
fascinating to see two powerhouse comedic actors playing off of each other, and Robin Williams is the serious one,
right?
You know, it was amazing.
It was, it was a very dry wit.
Oh my God, he had hairy arms. Robin Williams is great, but man is hairy.
Yeah. Speaking of, I love the fact on Popeye, his first movie, how they transferred his hairy arms to Popeye. If you look at Popeye's forearms, his forearms are just like big bear fur on his arms. Yeah. But that's Robin Williams.
I don't think he'd make it in the Philippines.
Oh, I think Popeye was amazing.
Yeah.
I just love that movie.
Yeah, I saw that when I was like 10 or something.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was pretty cool. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that we were talking earlier. That was his very first film after Mork and Mindy.
I didn't know that one.
And it bombed, right?
It bombed horribly.
Which is funny because... You know, these days everybody talks about making these cartoon movies and being faithful to the comics, being faithful to the original materials.
Mm-hmm.
That movie was so faithful
mm-hmm.
to Popeye as to be a living cartoon. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
I'm reading here that the budget for it was $20 million, but it made $50 million. I don't think the critics liked it.
No, because what the draw was Robin Williams.
Yeah,
people wanted to see it.
And it was
and as I've said previously, a lot of people will go and see a Robin Williams movie a second time because there's stuff that they missed because they were laughing.
Well, and speaking of the depression and stuff and the ups and downs that he probably went through, that's exactly it. He came off of Mork and Mindy, you know, extremely, you know, high fame-wise, and then he does Popeye, which... You know, yeah, it eventually did good, but it was panned by the critics. And then next is World According to Garp, which is also panned. It's good by the critics, but not by the public. I mean, it's got to be such an up and down to, you know, come rushing out and just like, ugh.
Well, and that's the business, though. I mean,
yeah.
And that's probably why there are so many actors that struggle with depression and struggle with addiction. I mean, myself, when we were in college, you had moved out. You had gone to Dallas. But I acted in a main stage play. Mm-hmm. And we did 7 nights. I think we did 2 matinees during that run. And it was amazing. Every night, standing ovations, just packed houses, you know. And when the show was done, I went into a massive fit of depression for about 3 weeks. I didn't leave my couch. I couldn't get myself out of my house because I just couldn't face the world without the applause. It's why I didn't pursue acting. Yeah. I was like, I can't deal with this. It's why I went into, why I really stuck it out and stayed with the behind the scenes stuff. But you guys know, I still love acting. Mm-hmm. Just know that I can't pursue it.
No.
Oh, that movie you were speaking of, it's The Angriest Man in Brooklyn.
Yes, The Angriest.
You said the last Man in Brooklyn, or Last Man Standing in Brooklyn.
No, I said The Last Angriest Man, because there's a, there is a film.
We had lost Solo. I'm bringing it back.
There is a movie, it's called The Last Angry Man.
Yeah. And there's also one, Last Man Standing.
Last Man Standing. So
there's a lot of
The Angriest Man in Brooklyn.
Hey, Solo, you back?
Yeah. I'm here.
We lost you, so I rang you back.
You were speaking about depression and, you know, staying on your couch for 3 weeks. If you look at Robin's resume of work, he was always working on something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, despite the fact that he may have been suffering from depression, he kept working.
Yeah.
I mean, if he wasn't working on a film or a stand-up routine, he was doing charity work.
Mm-hmm.
He was a spokesperson for St. Jude's. He did, well, like, they did what, the eight?
Comedy relief for
comic relief. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he also did charity where he competed in Ironman competitions.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, with cancer survivors. So.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Amazing what he does.
Well, you know, as somebody who's battled depression myself, I can say that keeping busy is one surefire way of trying to battle depression too.
That, and also not just keeping busy, but also being physical,
mm-hmm.
Exercising, and just keep moving. I mean, the worst thing you do is being stagnant and isolate.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're out, you're doing something, you're being active, you're in action. I mean, you can't think about your depression. You can't have those racing thoughts that get you spiraling.
You still have the thoughts. They're just not in the forefront of
your
life.
You don't let it sink its teeth into you, is what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so there are lots of times when he probably was, you know, more upbeat and much more you know, together. It's the down times that really, you know, sink, I think, a lot of actors who go in this business, and you end up, you know, working for 3 months and then not working for 2 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's got to hurt the psyche.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And then, you know, money involved too. You know, you might be working, but you're not making the money you were making. And yeah.
It's... Yeah, a lot of the films that he's worked on didn't have a very big budget.
Mm-mm. It's kind of one of those things. You just got to keep working, because you never know when, you know, when's your next last film.
The Michael Caine approach to working. Accept everything, because it might be the last thing they offer you.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
What about Nicolas Cage?
That's the other one.
Carla, do you have any final thoughts on Robin Williams you want to share with everybody?
No, that I think he'll be missed. He'll be missed for a lot of things. I think, you know, he's now going to end up opening up the discussion again about depression and alcoholism or addiction in some way that affects you. You know, I think, you know, personally, I'm sorry that he's gone. I was looking forward to Mrs. Doubtfire too. I was any other projects he was working on, because I've said it on Facebook. He's one of those guys that you stop and you listen and I watch whatever he's in, except for 1 hour photo. And he had one of these distinctive voices in cartoons that I think a generation or will never know.
Yeah. Completely.
Solo, your thoughts?
No, I mean, he was a great actor. He did great works. And I mean, I think it showed. It showed in everything that he did that he had a passion for it, and he really, truly enjoyed it. I mean, whether it was in voiceover work or in actual, like, comedic acting or serious acting, I mean, it looked like he gave it 110% each time. And I mean, I hope, like,
younger generations and other people like watch his movies and just watch his stand up and see like how great he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's unfortunate that we have to do shows like this where we mourn people passing in such a terrible ways. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I think that if he had died from a heart attack or a car accident, or he had been lingering from cancer and, you know, it was his time to go, I don't think that we would be as affected.
Mm-hmm.
We would mourn his loss, yes, and there'd be like a couple days of tributes. But I think in the manner in which he has passed, I think it brings a very stark reality of what's going on with people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so many people are struggling right now with the economy the way it is and jobs as hard to come by as they have been. There's a lot of people out there who are hurting and struggling to get through their days. And I think this just hits home with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot more people are battling depression than I think
people even realize. I think everyone has had a bout of depression, no matter how slight or how severe the issues may be, either depression or addiction of some sort. And I think that it's one of the harder things that this medical community that we have right now cannot or will not effectively deal with.
Yeah.
Between laws and medical and insurance and all this other stuff that we have to deal with in our lives, it's the one thing that you really, you know, it's one of those tiptoe subjects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually talked with addiction survivor and spiritual healer Roy Nelson tonight. And he actually talks with us a little bit about how to approach people who are struggling with these problems. So that'll be a good piece for people to hear. Carla, thanks for joining us tonight. Carla, of course, is one of the lead producers of the Intellectual Network. Thank you for having me on tonight. And Solomon is the solo of Wayne and Solo on the Random Radio podcast. And we appreciate you joining us tonight, Solomon.
No, thank you guys.
And if you haven't listened to the Random Radio podcast, please make sure you check them out at theintellectual.com. They are hilarious, the two of them, completely irreverent.
We try.
And listening to you guys today in the car, completely vulgar too. I'm referencing a certain finger discussion that went in today's episode. So thanks for the laughs today, Solo. And in light of everything going on in the world, we could all use a little bit more laughter.
So
that's a dog next door that's just
whining. He's sad that Robin Williams passed away.
That plaintive whale. Yeah. Is just a dog next door.
I know my dog's looking at me going, what on earth is going on?
All right, guys, you have a good night.
All right, you too.
Thanks.
And if you want a linguistic adventure, go drinking with a Scotsman. Because you can't fucking understand them before. You land in Scotland and they're going, Tiro, get married, feel I? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck the boat. That's it. That's something you think of it. Sure. Oh, fuck you, right? Oh, you know the buff like backside that sweep your ass on the floor of it, Kevin. Hey. Sure. Oh, sure, you dumb fucking bastard. You realize that, eh? And you realize how drunk they get. They could wear a skirt and not care. And how they can invent a sport like golf. Here's my idea for a fucking sport. I knock a ball in a gopher hole. Oh, you mean like pool? Fuck off, pool! That was a straight stick with a little fucked up stick. I whack the ball that goes in a gopher hole. Oh, you mean like croquet? Fuck croquet! I put the hole hundreds of yards away! Oh, fuck out of here! Beat thunder! Yeah, that's a thing. Oh, like a bowling thing. Fuck no! Not three, I put shit in the way!
like cheese and bushes and high glass, so you can lose your fucking ball and go whacking away with a fucking tire iron. Whacking away, and each time you miss, you feel like you're gonna have a stroke. Fuck, that's what we'll call it. A stroke, because every time you miss, you feel like you're gonna fucking die. Oh, gee. Oh, here's a bit of fat. Oh, fuck, this is brilliant. Right near the end, I'll put a flat piece with a little flag to give you fucking hope. But then I'll put a tool and a sandbox to fuck with your ball again. Ah, you'll be there trashing your ass, jerking away in the sand. Oh, you do this one time. Fuck no! 18 fucking times!
Thank you all for joining us tonight on this episode of the Intellectual Podcast, where we bid our farewells to comedic and dramatic genius Robin Williams. I personally would just like to say to the world that I would not be in entertainment probably if it had not been for Robin Williams in my childhood showing me what my verse could be. And showing me it was okay to be funny and be the class clown, and that it was okay to do something different than what was expected of you. And he will be sorely missed by myself and everybody here at the Intellectual Network, and I know around the world, as he was loved by millions. And we wish him peace in whatever comes after this. So, thank you guys for joining me tonight.
I think one person said real quick, it was a good way of putting it, as Aladdin says, genie, you're free.
Oh, you just made Steve cry. And me too. All right. Thanks, everybody. And wherever you're at, hug the person you love and be good to each other. You never know what it will do for the person that you're doing it for. Good night.
Don't leave us, Peter, and don't say goodbye.
What's goodbye?
It's going away. That's what it is. Forgetting about us all over again.
You're all my lost boys. I'll never forget you. Never. So who do I leave in charge?
Great game.
Thank you for believing.